lest we forget the American dream.
If you look through this observation window, Mr. Baker, you can see the Los Alamos power-producing pile.
Yeah. It's deadly stuff, isn't it, Dr. Slotman?
Yes, but only when a chain reaction starts. Until then, it's as lifeless as lead.
Can it start accidentally? I mean, is there any warning?
Yes, there have been accidents. As for warning, we have these instruments.
I understood that a chain reaction produces a faint bluish glow. Doesn't that serve as a warning?
No, it comes too late, Mr. Baker. Usually a chain reaction starts slowly, but it can leap to violence in the millionth of a second.
I see. You know, Dr. Slotman, while you've been talking, I've been wondering. Aren't you going to find university life a little dull after all this?
No, I don't think so. Why?
Why? That's a strange question from the man who assembled the first atom bomb.
Lest we forget the American dream. Another in this series of programs dedicated to you, to me, to all Americans, and the kind of America we want to live in. Today's story, Chain Reaction, stars Jackson Beck.
Nurse. Oh, nurse.
Yes.
I wonder if I can see Dr. Slotman now.
Dr. Slotman? Oh, I'm sorry, but no visitors are allowed.
Baker's my name, Frank Baker. He knows me. I've been trying to see him for a week, ever since the accident. I have clearance from the general to do a story about it.
I'm sorry, Mr. Baker, but Dr. Slotman is critically ill. He can see no one.
What about the two people who just went in? What are they, privileged characters?
They're Dr. Slotman's parents.
Oh. Oh, I'm sorry. It's that serious?
I'm afraid it is. Exposure to radiation is always serious, Mr. Baker.
He will get well, won't he?
We don't know yet. We're doing everything we can.
You walk away. You're sorry to hear that. You looked like a nice guy the day he took you through the laboratories. Too bad you didn't think then to ask him about himself. Well, old man Edwards wants a story, and you want it to be a good one, because if everything goes right, it'll be your swan song to the newspaper business. Then it's you for the publicity racket and the big dough. You look up one of the men who was with Slotman when the accident happened.
It happened right in this laboratory, Mr. Baker. Dr. Slotman was giving us final instructions. He was leaving Los Alamos, you know?
Yes, Dr. Jones, but I don't know why.
Well, he wanted to get back to his real work. Radiobiology.
I thought he was an atomic scientist.
Oh, he is, and a fine one. But it's the cure of cancer that he's really interested in. He'd waited a long time to continue his research.
Well, maybe he'll get a crack at it soon anyway. How did the accident happen?
Well, there were seven of us working here. Dr. Slotman was explaining the need for care.
We're dealing here with subcritical masses of plutonium. Now, when they're brought together to form a mass above critical size, a chain reaction starts producing deadly gamma rays. Extreme caution must be exercised at that point.
We were handling the material as we had dozens of times before, Mr. Baker. Then suddenly, some of it slipped and fell. Instantly, I saw a faint bluish glow.
A chain reaction.
That's right. And before anyone could stop him, Dr. Slotman leaped forward and broke the material apart with his bare hands.
So that's what happened.
Dr. Slotman turned to us. Each hair on his head was standing on end. And his hands, I couldn't look at his hands. It was horrible, Mr. Baker, horrible. And then he spoke. I'll never forget his voice.
Gentlemen, I'm sorry this happened. You must report to the hospital at once for treatment.
But what about you, Dr. Slotman?
Yes, we've got to help you right away.
No, no, please, please, you mustn't touch me. Go quickly, I'll follow you.
If it hadn't been for Dr. Slotman's quick action, Mr. Baker, all of us would be dead or dying today.
None of you was injured?
No. His body absorbed the full rain of the deadly gamma rays. He saved our lives.
And Dr. Slotman knew the consequences when he broke up that chain reaction, didn't he, Dr. Jones?
Oh, no question about it. And he knew it firsthand, not just theoretically.
What do you mean?
About 6 months ago, Harry DeGillian did the same thing.
What happened to him?
29 days later, DeGillian was dead. Dr. Slotin was with him to the end.
As you listen to the story, you ask yourself, what makes a man do a thing like that? Instinct? Impulse of the moment? Desire for glory? You don't know the answer, but a headline flashes through your mind. U.S. scientist risks life to save seven. And you know you have a story, a surefire story that old man Edwards will love. You go to the colonel in charge of such things to get background on Dr. Slotin.
That's a good headline, Baker. But you know, of course, that Dr. Slotin was not born in the United States.
He wasn't, but he is a citizen.
Oh, yes, he got his papers just recently. He's a Canadian, born in Winnipeg. Didn't come to the United States until 1937.
Had he been with the Manhattan Project long, Colonel?
From the very beginning in Chicago, then at Oak Ridge, and finally here at Los Alamos.
I understand he assembled the first bomb used at Alamogordo.
That one and all the others used at Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and Bikini.
How old is he, Colonel?
Quite young to have done so much. Just 34.
Automatically, you jot it down. Same age as you are. Well, you say to yourself, maybe Dr. Slotin went further, faster, but you don't envy him. You have a future ahead of you. A well-paying future. From what the nurse said, you don't know whether the same is true for Dr. Slotin.
There's one thing you ought to get into your story, Baker. Dr. Slotin may have been a scientist, but he didn't live in an ivory tower.
How do you mean, Colonel?
Well, for instance, after he got his Ph.D. in London, he visited Barcelona. That was in 1937.
Spain in 1937? Was he there during the Spanish Civil War?
Yes, he offered his services to the Spanish government.
As a scientist?
No, as an anti-aircraft gunner.
Why? Did he get caught up in the excitement?
No, that wasn't the reason he gave. I asked him about it.
Cease fire. They're out of range.
Lois Slotin, this is insane. Why are you doing this?
I could ask you the same question, Dr. Sanchez.
But with me it is different. I am a Spaniard. I have a personal score to settle with Hitler. His airplanes destroyed my laboratory, but you...
Your laboratory, Dr. Sanchez? No, it wasn't your laboratory. It was everyone's. And your discoveries, did you keep them to yourself or give them to people everywhere?
Yes, yes, but you are not a Spaniard.
No, but I have a personal interest in laboratories. The Nazis destroyed this one. They must be stopped or they'll destroy more and more, not only in Spain, but all over the world. Look out, they're coming over again. Open fire.
As you make your notes, you try to remember back to those days. You were interviewing celebrities then. All you were worried about was your byline. You knew there was fighting going on, China, Ethiopia, Spain, sure. But that was front page stuff, and you didn't do anything about that. Not until the Army made you take a personal interest in it for 4 long years.
And that wasn't the only time, Baker, that Dr. Slotin stuck his neck out.
He's quite a guy, isn't he?
You don't know the half of it. He was in Chicago working on the new cyclotron when the Nazis invaded Poland. The next day, they tell me, he went in to see his boss.
Well, Lewis... About time you came to see me. I was going to call you.
Well, there's something I'd like to talk to you about, Professor.
Of course, Lewis, but first, I've read your paper on tracer activity and its application to cancer research. It's quite a piece of work, my boy.
Thank you, Professor, but I... Well, I'd like a leave of absence.
Why don't you take a few weeks off instead, Lewis?
Well, that wouldn't be long enough, Professor. I'm going to England.
To England? But why, Lewis? England's at war.
That's just it. I'm joining the RAF.
I see. You've thought this over carefully, Lewis. You're doing very important work here, you know.
Yes, but not as important as what has to be done over there. If the Nazis win, the cure for cancer won't make much difference one way or another.
Well, Baker, Dr. Slotin went to England and the RAF accepted him. For a few weeks, everything went well. Then his commanding officer called him and told him, since the RAF insisted on perfect vision, there was no alternative but to give him his honorable discharge papers.
You listen to the story, and suddenly you remember what old man Edwards told Grace when you married her. A lot of talent, Grace, he said, but not much heart. See if you can't give him some. If he had that, he'd be a great newspaper man. But that doesn't pay off, you say to yourself. What does it get you? What Slotin got? No, sir, you look out for yourself like everybody else does. But suddenly, you're not so sure. Everybody? What about Slotin? Yeah, what about Slotin?
Well, there's not much more to tell, Baker. Dr. Slotin was summoned back to the United States to work on the bomb. He's been bad at it ever since.
Well, thank you, Colonel. Just one more thing.
Yes, what's that?
How do you explain a man like that?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, a guy that doesn't think of himself. It's always sticking his neck out for something or somebody.
Well, there are a lot of people like that, Baker.
Maybe, but I haven't met them. Why did he do it?
Well, I was in the general's office right after the Alamogordo test. Dr. Slotin was there, too.
Well, you assembled and delivered the bomb, Dr. Slotin. If you want to keep the receipt, I have no objection.
Well, thank you, General. I would like to keep it.
But I'm curious. Why do you want it? As a souvenir?
Perhaps you can call it that. A souvenir of what people, all kinds of people, working together and helping each other can accomplish. That's why I'd like to keep it, General.
Perhaps that's the clue you're after, Baker.
Perhaps. You know, if ever a man seems to have lived a Christian life, that man is Dr. Slotin.
Yes. That's a very interesting commentary, Baker.
Why do you say that?
Because Dr. Slotin happens to be Jewish.
As you walk back to the hospital, Dr. Slotin becomes more than a story you're going to write. Deep down, you're beginning to have doubts about leaving the newspaper. That big dough and publicity, well, suddenly it doesn't seem so important. Then you look up. You see Dr. Slotin's nurse and a little group of people standing around his door.
Nurse, what happened? Is Dr. Slotin all right?
No, Mr. Baker. Dr. Slotin is dead.
Finish typing your story. You know it won't be your swan song to the newspaper business. Let the others build up and publicize the small achievements for the big dough. This is what you want. To discover the truth about people and things and to do something about it. You in your way, as Slotin did in his. You pick up your story and start to read it. On May 30th, Memorial Day, 1946, Dr. Louis Alexander Slotin laid down his life so that seven of his colleagues might live. In his life and death can be found America's answer to those who, if they had their way, would have denied him that opportunity because he was foreign-born and of a different religion. He was a scientist engaged in the most modern of scientific achievements, the splitting of the atom. Yet his was truly an American life, dedicated to the service of his fellow men.
The Institute for Democratic Education has brought you another in its series, Lest We Forget. The American Dream. Listen in again next week for another of these programs dedicated to you, to me, to all Americans, and the kind of America we want to live in, not tomorrow, but today.